So I mentioned at the beginning of Mass that we begin a new portion of the Gospel for the next bunch of Sundays here in a row, starting this Sunday. We're in John's Gospel, you just heard. This is a year B, the middle of the ABC cycle, and year B is customarily devoted to Mark on the Sundays, which is a wonderful Gospel. Mark is beautiful, but the trick is that Mark is a short Gospel. So when they put the election together around 1970 or so, they had to figure out how to fill in some of Mark, because we run out of Mark, you see, if we go through all the Sundays. So custom is that in this year, in the summertime, where we're at right about now, we drop in a whole bunch of John to supplement. And it's about five Sundays. It's five that runs across the whole season here. Late into August, we're going to go. Although this year, one drops because Sunday, the August 15th, is the Feast of Mary's Assumption, so that will suppress the John readings. So we're going to get four out of the usual five of these sections. What do they supplement Mark with? Well, John's Gospel, yes, and John chapter 6. Why John chapter 6? Because almost all John chapter 6, except for the few verses we skip over, a little tiny piece, is all about the bread of life, this tremendous sign that Jesus does for all these people. It's about, therefore, the Eucharist, about the Mass, about what the church documents say is the source and summit of our faith. That's what the Eucharist is. So the creator's lectionary thought, well, what a great thing to do. Let's drop in this portion of text to bring us home every so often to this beautiful gift of the Eucharist, and we'll pray about that in the summer months in Mark's year. So that's what's going on here. So we start that now. So that's the run that we're on for a few weeks. Now, a dilemma for preachers like myself is that the Gospels are kind of similar from the next several weeks. So how do you kind of pick different angles on it, you might say, so I do not repeat myself too badly. This would be the trick here. So for tonight, on the opener, when we get the actual miracle itself, how about this as a direction on it? It would be this idea. Again, you can say a lot about John, okay, but this for tonight anyway. Maybe what is happening here is that Jesus in this story gives us something of a template or an idea, or let's call it a movement, of how to help us understand how to engage the Mass. How about that? What we're going to hear in the story we just heard is really about how you engage our beautiful liturgical prayer called the Mass. It's going on in this reading. So here's how. So first thing to note, all right, from the readings about what it is to engage the Mass, and I could put it like this. To get something from Mass that's meaningful, fruitful, and good, we must give ourselves permission to believe in the power of the miraculous. We have to give ourselves permission to believe in the power of the miraculous and in the fact that God actively intervenes in the world. He's actively, dynamically present, and he does stuff all the time. So miracles happen and God acts. We have to allow ourselves to believe in that. This is a hard thing. Okay, so for the ancients in this time period of the Gospel, and all the way through medieval and beyond into almost modern days, people were better at this than we are. They weren't so, the word is materialistic, and don't think greedy, think focused on the senses. We're very sensory in our world. They were back then too, but for us, if I can't smell it, taste it, touch it, hear it, it doesn't exist. That's how we tend to think. We're very categorized, we're very scientific, we're very rationalistic that way. And it's very nice, I guess, but the thing is, it's very narrow. It's a very narrow way to look at reality. But for the ancients, though, yeah, the senses were there, and what they showed us was that the world was dynamically alive in a very mysterious, almost mythical kind of way. They looked at things like plants and birds and rocks and mountains and streams as having like minds of their own. You kind of had to dialogue or argue with them to make them do what you wanted them to do. It was kind of cool. It was mystical. For them, the gods were behind it, or for the Jews, the one God was behind it, but all of creation was kind of shimmering with God's fingerprints. He was very active. So in that kind of mindset, miracles happened. Miracles were a daily occurrence. God broke in all the time, and we just had to kind of let it happen and accept it for the beauty that it was, and we had to ask for it. And the world was enlivened by this very mystical sense of faith, with reality and God all kind of blurred together. That's the old mindset. We don't do that as well today. We don't realize how materialistic, again, sensory we are, and we block out God's power. But the fact is, all right, if we're going to get to this in the Mass, we must allow ourselves to just let our mind accept the fact that God acts Miracles happen, wonders occur, and things happen that science, for as nice as it is just beyond its ability to explain. We believe in a bigger world, much bigger world, than science often allows us to in our current day. How is that true in the gospel? So we have Jesus walking along the shoreline, Galilee, and he's got 5,000 men he's going to feed here. Now, 5,000 just the men, so multiply, let's call it 30,000 people to count some women and kids who are probably along on the trip. So all of West Bend is camped out on the seashore here. They are hungry. He goes to the mountain and he asks his apostles, knowing what he's going to do. John's very good about this. Jesus sets up these little, he sets up his little tests, right? He says, so how are we going to feed all these people? Philip and Andrew do what we often do. They gravitate right away to the only merely earthly, material, basic sensory solutions. And they fail to understand that right in front of them is the one who can act to solve it. That God is alive, he's dynamic, that wonders happen, that miracles and that stretch the bonds of our often conceited reality are possible. They don't see that he's right there. So when he asks the question, they say, Philip's like, we need a lot of money. We're getting all the money for these people. I mean, what a common thing to say, right? We need more time, more money, more this, more committees, more, God forbid, you name it, right? So he goes right to, what can we do with the usual earthly stuff? Jesus kind of goes right past him. Yep, yeah, you failed. Okay, next. Andrew, there's a boy here who's got his lunch, 5 loaves and 2 fish. Then he goes, but that's not enough for all these people. He fails. Okay. So they do what we always do. Their minds are too small. Their focus is too narrow. They don't understand who is in front of them. For us to grasp the Mass, the Eucharist, what happens on this altar is to allow ourselves the permission to think that God acts here, that God's alive here, that he can multiply things here, that what's going to happen on the altar in a few moments as I pray for bread and wine, and you pray along with me, is he's going to change it in a way that science doesn't really have a category for. For us, it's mystery, it's majesty, it's miracle, it's wonder, it's all those things, and it is real. It's because God intervenes right now, not just once upon a time. He does it all the time. He's always acting, always acting. We just have to kind of ask, and he does it. So in the gospel, he's got to move Andrew, Philip, and the crew from their merely horizontal, flat, narrow, material way of thinking about things to a deep, deep, broad way of understanding God is alive, God cares, and God does wondrous things. Same thing for us. We have to move in the same movement. Mass will have power to the extent that I allow myself to believe it's a miraculous thing by a God who intervenes right now. Second movement, or a template, or whatever you want to call it, that's important for the story and us about how to get something out of Mass, has to do with this, I often call him like the unsung hero in the story. Those of you who have been listening to my John series, which ended today, although they're up on the web for a long time, so you can go back and listen if you didn't catch up, that's cool. I did a whole bunch of sessions on this story, and I mentioned this, it's about the boy. The boy with the lunch, okay, who has the 5 barley loaves and the 2 fish. My thesis, and you can hear it in my series if you listen to it, is that when Andrew notices what he has, that the boy handed everything over to Jesus. He didn't keep anything back for himself. 5 loaves, 2 fish. Now, if I'm this kid on the hillside with all these people in my lunch, and this apostle walks up and says, hey, I want that food. The master wants it. My first reaction is going to be, no, this is my lunch. Or maybe, sure, here's 3 loaves, and I'm going to keep 2 in my back pocket because this might not turn out so well, and I got to eat tonight. No. I really do believe that the boy handed everything over. And it worked so beautifully because he was trusting and generous with his response. And from that came the bounty, multitude, and the miraculous thing that was to come. I would say for us, same thing. Mass is going to be, I would say, fruitful in a multiplicity of graces to the extent that we do the same thing the boy did. We hand everything over. God wants it all, not just a piece, not just the convenient parts, he wants everything. So what we have tonight, we have people gathered in this room to make an offering. We're all here to make an offering, right? I'm not just talking about money, although that's super cool and I appreciate it. No, I'm talking about offering your hearts, your lives, your worries, your fears. You know, see, we're coming to Mass, we're going to bring to it some focus, some engagement, some energy, some attention. We're going to bring to it whatever is on our minds and hearts. That's a collection of lots of stuff, isn't it? Think about all that goes into a week. So, during the last week, since the last Sunday, when you were here probably last time, joyful things, happy things, uplifting things, accomplishments, victories over sin and temptation, cool things you did at work, stuff that God did through you, I mean, blessings, sure. Also, arguments, fights, problems at home, nagging bosses, political difficulties, things at school, things on the highway, arthritis aches, all of it. It's just the whole stew of life. So God says to us, when you come to Mass like this boy, I want you to hand all that over to me and put it all on the altar and realize you're making an offering of everything, everything. And Jesus is intensely interested in all of it. He's just crazy about us as people, and he wants all of it. He wants nothing wasted, okay? So Mass is not a passive thing, all right? It's not entertainment. We often think that it's supposed to be that way, but that's not true. It's entirely about what one engages and what one puts forth. So we're going to allow our minds to believe in the miraculous and the wondrous and the mystical, what's beautiful and powerful that God intervenes, and we're going to offer everything. Really, really, really try to engage this prayer and put our whole selves on the altar with the bread and the wine. We go there too. Which leads to number three, last piece. So this happens in the story. He moves him from flat to transcendent. He takes everything from this kid, the whole lunchbox, all right? And then how does it end up? It's amazing. John's very keen on this point. He says that they have all these leftovers. He says they had their fill. Like they just kept eating and eating, and there was just more, and there was more. And then when it was all done, he says, hey, get some, gather the fragments, waste nothing. They pick up 12 wicker baskets, 12 being the perfect number of completion and abundance. So in other words, John's saying they had a whole lot of food left over. From the 5 loaves and 2 fish, they had everything they needed and more. God is generous. He's lavish. He is abundant. And he wants to just shower us with graces and power and peace and goodness and mercy. This is an abundant God. Holds nothing back. But like I said, it works to the extent that they engaged it and they allow themselves to believe that something could be done. Us too, same thing. The Mass is full of graces. The Eucharist is all that we really actually need. The saints have lived on it, literally, okay, and had nothing else because they realized who and what it was. So it is abundance. The loaves are multiplied here. They're multiplied around the world every single day. But the trick is, I think it's only going to impact us in that way. We're going to feel its bounty and understand its bounty if we engage it with fullness, with all of our hearts, and allow ourselves to believe in the miracle of it. People say to me all the time, I don't get anything out of Mass, which is a common refrain. Maybe you've heard it from friends, neighbors, kids, parents. And my reaction is always, well, what have you put into it? This is not a passive spectator activity. Catholic prayer takes real engagement. I'm sorry, but it's hard. It takes effort. If you sit here on the pew like a rock, you're going to leave like a rock. That's how it goes. But if one comes and engages it, they're going to get a lot more out of it. So it's a function of what do I plug into, all right? I must be present to who is present to me. I must be present to who is present to me. If he's fully present to me, I strive to be fully present to him. And as I am, I can just sense the abundance. I've got more than I've got leftovers. I go home with leftovers every Mass. I go home with leftovers if I know what it is. On I could go. Point is, okay, the Mass is a beautiful gift. It's a treasure. We take it for granted. We have for years as Catholics, right? And the Church wants to spend some time in these days now, these Sundays ahead, this kind of precious gift in year B, this kind of pause in John to just drink in the truth of what we celebrate, who we celebrate, who it is, that there are miracles, that he's active, that he's abundant, and that he wants us to put everything on the altar because he desires all of it, all of it. So much does he love us, so generous is our God, so powerful, miraculous is our God, is the Eucharist, is the Mass, is the bread of life. So we praise him, we thank him, and we live it, we love it, and we proclaim it.